But one of the groups mentioned there is put. Where are we going to put, as the saying goes? That would be modern-day Libya. Another nation is Kush. That would be the modern-day Sudan. Then you have Persia. I think Persia is the easiest to identify because Persia's name was changed to Iran in 1935. Iran was Islamicized in 1979 with the toppling of the Shah and replacing the Shah with the Ayatollah. And consequently, Persia then became known as the Islamic Republic of Iran. Magog, I believe, is the nations of Central Asia, which would include the various stands, Kazakhstan and others. Meshach, Tubal, Gorma, and Togarma, I believe, is the modern-day nation of Turkey. And then we have this name, Rosh, who I think is Russia. Let me give you this citation from Wilhelm Gesenius. Gesenius is no lightweight. Gesenius is the father of what we call modern-day lexicography, which is the science and art of compiling Hebrew dictionaries. And all the way back in 1842, this is what Gesenius said about Rosh. He says it's undoubtedly the Russians. Now, he made that statement before the communist revolution in Russia. He made that statement while Russia was still basically a Christian Orthodox country. He made this statement before Russia became a modern-day nuclear superpower, so he wasn't doing what we call newspaper exegesis, reading the headlines back into the Bible, as sometimes we're accused of doing. It was his study of Byzantine writers of the 10th century, and he believed that this is where Rosh settled. So look at these various players that we have. We have Russia, Turkey, Central Asia, Iran, the Sudan, and Libya. So that sort of helps us with the who question. Well, this takes us to the second question, which is the when question. Exactly when is this invasion going to occur? The committee wanted me to focus a little bit here. And unfortunately, it's not the easiest question to answer because there's at least seven views on it. So let me sort of track through these seven views and tell you why I think they're incorrect and give you what I think is the correct view. Preterists, who we talked about in the prior session, those that believe that Bible prophecy is past, try to argue that this invasion already happened in the book of Esther, chapter 9. So Ezekiel was written in the 6th century. The book of Esther basically takes place in the 5th century, roughly. And so they think that this battle has already transpired. They believe its fulfillment is in Esther, chapter 9. The problem with that, of course, is when the Battle of Esther 9 happened, the Jews weren't even in their own land. They were in Persia at that time. This battle is talking about something that comes against the Jews while they're living in the land of Israel. So obviously that first option doesn't work very well. The second option is this is a battle that takes place at the beginning of the millennial kingdom. And why in the world do people believe that? They believe that because of the prophecies in it of peace. It takes place during a time period of peace. The problem, though, is there's no wars in the millennial kingdom. Isaiah 2 and verse 4 says, "And he will judge between the nations. He will render decisions for many peoples. They will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they study or learn of war." This is describing a war. So it doesn't fit the beginning of the millennial kingdom at all, does it? Other people believe that this battle will take place at the end of the millennial kingdom. They get that from Revelation 20 and verse 8, which says, and will come out and deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, same entities mentioned here, to gather them together for war. The number of them is like the sand of the seashore. So people see that reference to Gog and Magog, and at the end of the millennial kingdom, as you probably know, Satan is released from his abyss, having been incarcerated there for 1,000 years, and he deceives the nations into rebelling against God in one final rebellion. And many people think that that's what Ezekiel 38 and 39 is speaking of. But again, that particular view doesn't work very well, for the simple reason that this is describing in Ezekiel 38 a northern invasion. That end time battle at the end of the millennium is nations coming from everywhere. Beyond that, the nations in Revelation 20 are really not identified specifically the way Ezekiel 38 and 39 identifies these various nations. The main argument is, well, the name Gog and Magog is used. Must be the same battle, right? Well, not necessarily. We use in the United States the expression Waterloo quite a bit. We say, I've fought my Waterloo. Waterloo was the great battle of the past. And when we say, I've fought my Waterloo, or I'm fighting my Waterloo, we're not saying the battle of Waterloo is being fought all over again. We're just using Waterloo as a figure of speech to describe the intensity of our current conflict, see? So I think that's how Gog and Magog is used in Revelation 20, verse 8. It's not saying Ezekiel 38 and 39 is happening. What it's saying is the battle of Ezekiel 38 and 39 is so famous by that time, having already occurred, that it's just analogized to a present war. Other people believe that this battle, Ezekiel 38 and 39, is going to happen at the end of the tribulation period, and they connect it with the battle of Armageddon. Revelation 16 and verse 16 says, and they gathered them together to a place which in Hebrew is called Armageddon. So they basically believe that Ezekiel 38 and 39 is a description of Armageddon itself. But notice the differences here between Ezekiel 38 and 39 and the battle of Armageddon. In Ezekiel 38 and 39, there's really no battle. The war starts, but God immediately judges the enemies. But at Armageddon, there's an ongoing battle between armies, the armies and the Lord. In Ezekiel 38 and 39, invaders come from the west and primarily from the north, but not so in Armageddon. The nations, all nations invade. In Ezekiel 38 and 39, the enemies are destroyed on Israel's mountains, but not so in Armageddon. The events take place in Jerusalem and the valley of Jehoshaphat. In Ezekiel 38 and 39, Israel is dwelling in safety, but not so in Armageddon. Israel is not dwelling in safety. In Ezekiel 38 and 39, there's no massive flow of blood recorded, but at Armageddon, blood is going to be raised as high as the horses' bridles for 200 miles. In Ezekiel 38 and 39, fire comes down from heaven and destroys the enemies. You don't have any such thing described at Armageddon. So I don't think this is talking necessarily about Armageddon. Many people, and a lot of people with very big names that you would know, are arguing today that this is a battle that takes place before the tribulation period even begins. Some people will place it in between the rapture and the beginning of the tribulation period, which is the Antichrist signing a peace treaty with Israel, which launches the tribulation period. You'll notice in this chart here that there's a space of time between the rapture and the beginning of the tribulation period. Most charts don't reflect that. They give you the impression that the tribulation period starts right after the rapture. It could, but we don't know that for sure. So many people postulate a space of weeks, months, or years between the rapture and the beginning of the 7-year tribulation period And they place this battle right there in that particular gap of time or that particular space.